Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Attendance Bias. I am your host, Brian Weinstein. Today's guest is Robert Miller. I love every episode of Attendance Bias, and while hosting this podcast, it's become clear to me that the word special or the word meaningful means something different for every fan. The guidance I give anyone who would like to be a guest is to pick a special or meaningful story that you have, or a special or meaningful show that you've seen. Some people end up talking about their first show, other fans have a special connection with the venue or the city where the show was played, and sometimes it's simply a matter of the music. Other times, a fan has a memory and an emotional connection to a particular song played that night. That's the case for today's episode, where Rob picked If I Could from October 11th, 1995 at the Compton Terrace Amphitheater in Phoenix, Arizona. Rob was in college at the time, and we've all been there. We go on an adventure with someone who starts off as a friend. But during the adventure, we sometimes get tunnel vision, and we want the friend to become something more than a friend. Sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. But there are the rare times when our favorite band becomes the soundtrack to that memory, and a specific song gains meaning and weight, as it somehow describes the situation right in the very moment. It's not always that simple, but sometimes it makes for a good story, and that's why we're all here in the first place, right? So let's join Rob to chat about the Fall 95 tour, our dream special guests, and when it is and when it isn't okay to take a pee break as we break down If I Could from October 11th, 1995 at the Compton Terrace Amphitheater in Phoenix. Robert Miller, welcome to Attendance Bias. How are you?
I'm great, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's a little rainy here in New York this afternoon, but otherwise, start of a new week. I'm very excited to speak with you today because you picked a very particular song, a very particular performance from a show I'd never heard before. That it would be If I Could from Phish's performance on October 11th, 1995 at the Compton Terrace Amphitheater in Chandler, Arizona.
Correct. Yes, a very specific moment in time we're going to talk about. Not even a whole song, almost.
Well, yeah, because very few people for this podcast have chosen shows from 1995. I recently did a recording with a friend of mine who picked a show from just a few days before this, from October 8th in Montana, 95. So I'm excited to hear another perspective on what this Fall 95 tour that's lived in my imagination since I got into Phish as being the tour of tours.
Yeah, I'm hoping more people will come on and talk about it because there's just endless amounts of good content, good moments, big moments, stuff that we look forward to when we, you know, look through our tape decks or, you know, what we're gonna listen to now. It's a lot of 95 for me, that's for sure. Fall 95, huge.
Yeah, it used to be for me. I used to seek out any Fall 95 tape that I could find. Like if I saw that one of those dates on a tape, it was, let's get it, bring it on. And then once 97 happened, that became the most recent. And then once we got back to 2.0, there was really no more searching for tapes anymore.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to find from all of the eras, but I'm glad to talk about Fall 95 with you tonight.
Absolutely. So let's get to know you a bit as a Phish fan and your background. Let's get started with the Attendance Bias Lightning Round.
Attendance Bias Lightning Round.
So, Robert, when was your first Phish show?
It's the show we're talking about, Brian. It's October 11th, 1995.
What led you there?
Well, I was a freshman at Arizona State University. And I was, by a stroke of luck, I was invited to go to the show that night. So, yeah, I consider it very lucky to be at that show that night. And here we are today.
What's your most recent show? And what did you think of it?
I went to the Saturday show at MSG on the 23rd of April, the night after the New Year's Eve Earth Day gag. So that was my last one.
What did you think of it?
Well, it was good. In hindsight, it was I felt a little let down, but that's just because the previous night was just such a something you'll remember forever, I think. It was great to be with friends on the 23rd, but yeah,
It's funny. I thought musically, I thought that Saturday night was as good as any other. I thought that first set, you know, sometimes how I judge a show is when do I go to the bathroom? Like how many songs do I feel comfortable leaving my seat that night? I didn't go until the very last song of the first set. I think it was first tube.
Yeah. When I say letdown, I don't think it's that the quality or anything was down. It was just the mood was a little bit different, but yeah, great night. Also a lot of songs. I've gone back and listened to that, a lot of good songs on that night too. And that was my friend's 31st show, and he heard Divided Sky for the first time that night. So
oh, wow.
There are little magic moments in every night. And yeah, the 23rd was great.
If a friend asked you to check out Phish, he or she wants to get into them for the first time, what would you recommend? Can you give us one live example and one studio example?
My original answer to you in the notes was to go with Slip, Stitch, and Pass for the live stuff, because the sound is so good on that album. And then I was like, well, what about, what was it? Oh, Hampton Comes Alive came up to my mind, but that's got like 45 songs on it.
Yeah, that's something I bought it on CD when it came out. So that was like six discs. That's impossible. If you give that to someone, that's paralyzed by choice.
I'm going to stick with Slip, Stitch, and Pass because it's condensed. It's just a little over an hour. It showcases some of the things that I love the most about Phish, the humor, just the tightness, the communication. And I think it's pretty easy listening. Some covers in there, and I think it's a great place to start.
Yeah, I agree. If someone doesn't really dig Jesus Just Left Chicago from that disc, I don't know if there's any saving them.
Yeah, if that doesn't hook you, then not much will.
What's a venue where you'd love to see Phish, but you haven't yet had the opportunity?
I want to go to the Gorge. I was on the West Coast at a lot of shows on the lower West Coast, but never made it to the Gorge. And every time I see pictures or talk to friends about it, it seems like it's a must attend kind of place to go.
I would agree with that. My favorite thing about the Gorge is it feels like a festival, because whenever you think you're almost there, you're not. You just have to keep driving.
I've heard that too. Yeah, the long trip in is something in and of itself. So.
What is your most controversial Phish opinion?
I don't think it's really controversial, but I want more sit-ins. That's my opinion. I love the Carl Perazzo from Gainesville in 96. I think it was. I listened to that show a lot, and I to go and have something like that happen on a night, or the Giant Country Horns. We all kind of want that, or some of us want that. So that's my little opinion. That's maybe not controversial.
Well, do you have a favorite sit-in?
That's the one, the Carl Perazzo Gainesville one. I just like the layer that he adds throughout the entire show. That's also unique. Set in for the entire show. So, but I'll do just an encore or something like the Dave Matthews in Mexico would have been nice. I would have liked to have been there to have seen that. But
you read my mind. I was going to ask what you thought of it, because speaking of controversy,
I don't have a problem with anything really, and certainly not that. I mean, two guys, old friends, having fun. I mean, that's kind of one of the reasons that I go, see people having fun, having a good time. I don't, you know, if the song was good or bad, I don't even know. I just was enjoying the moment. So I'm not going to go back and rip the song apart and see if it was great or anything. I just think that for that moment in time, Trey happy, Dave happy, the band having a good time. Everybody's on vacation. What are you going to do? Can't complain about stuff like that.
Yeah, I felt the same.
Yeah. And sometimes those paths and this time of their lives, they don't cross all that often. So I think it was a great thing to witness, two people's paths crossing at the right time. And, you know, we all want to feel like we're friends with the band or close with the band or something. And I think that would be hard not to feel pretty close to the energy on the beach that night. Was probably pretty palpable.
It was. It was simultaneously exciting, but also very mellow at the same time, which I think was kind of Mexico in a nutshell.
Right.
I had two songs, and your answers kind of related to one another. coming up. So my first question was your preferred pee break song. If you had to take a piss break when this song starts, which one is it?
I don't really have one. I just sort of, I go when I need to. I've heard a lot of songs. If I've missed something, I'm not going to be disappointed. If I were in the bathroom or in the line to get a drink or something and heard the first notes of Reba or something, I would run back to the seats, but I'm not going to go anywhere and for a specific song. That's not me.
Right. And the follow-up question is, what song wouldn't you miss if your life depended on it? But I think you just answered it.
It's very much Reba. I'm a Reba person through and through. Ever since this first show, even there wasn't a Reba that night that we're going to talk about, some really good ones happened right after this show. Digesting a lot of Fall 95 as I have in the past, and even to this day, those Rebas, you know, they keep me going. I hear something new every time. So I wouldn't miss Reba for the world. So,
in your opinion, do you have a Reba that stands out above the others?
I've always said that it's the 10-21-95, the one that's in Lincoln.
Is that Nebraska?
Yeah, that's the Lincoln show. I've probably listened to that song more than any other song in my life, that particular one. I really like that, the way that one goes.
And what is the weirdest thing you've ever seen at a Phish show?
It's a bit of a cop-out, but I'm going to stick with the message that I gave my daughter, who I took to her first show last summer. And the first thing I told her when we got out of the car after driving from Houston to Rogers, Arkansas, I said, this is a no judgment zone. Nothing here is weird. So I don't think I've seen anything that's particularly weird at Phish. So I'm sticking with that.
What did you think of the show?
She loved it. Yeah, she loved it. And she was ready to go by the encore, but that didn't shock me at all. We were there a long day. She heard soundcheck too. So, I mean, it was a great day. Very hot though. If anyone out there was in Rogers that day, they know that was a scorching hot temperature show.
So you and your daughter are going to rent a van for this coming summer and you're just going to hit the road and sell jewelry out of the back of it and just go show to show?
She would, but we are getting in a car and we're going to Alabama. I'm taking the kids. So that'll be her. One of those shows will be her second, and one of them will be my son's first. So big, big moments coming up.
When was this show played?
So we touched on it just a little bit earlier, but Phish's Fall 95 tour is spoken of as if it's like this marathon that gained steam and gained speed as it went on, you know, leading up to Quadrophenia was kind of the big punctuation mark of that tour. I know that didn't end the tour, but it kind of like, I could picture this as sort of a, not a bell curve, but like a story. What is it called? A story arc. Yes. A Freytag's pyramid. I'm the English teacher. That's what it's called. And the whole tour just builds and builds and builds and builds and builds and reaches a climax. But it's almost like they started at the climax. Like, this is Phish at their fishiest, I would suggest.
It's chock full of everything, that fall tour. And it, that Quadrophenia show was huge. When you got that tape in the mail, that was a big moment. Because I didn't go to many shows. I didn't go to a show after when we're talking about tonight until 1998.
So, oh, wow.
I didn't see a lot of Phish. So, but the Fall 95 shows stand alone, I think, and just sort of like a, yeah, just barreling towards the rest of their career. I mean, I think it really kicked everything off.
I kind of agree. We could go forever about this, but I want to try something new. I've usually at this point of the episode or of Attendance Bias, we go over the root of the fall tour or whatever tour it is we're talking about, go over the highlights and stuff like that. But I want to try something new. I looked up other people's writing or other articles about the Fall 95 tour. And I found on Jambase an article that just had Fall 95 straight up by the numbers statistics. So it's just raw data. And I thought it would be fun. I would pick out a couple and you and I could go back and forth about what those say to you, what those numbers might say to you, sure. If anything, maybe not. So the one thing that we all know is that the Fall 95 tour was 54 shows. Nowadays, they don't even play more than 50 shows in a calendar year.
Yeah.
So that alone, did you see any shows other than this show on that tour, the 11th of October?
I did not. No. That was, freshman year of college. I didn't have a lot of time to hit the road. That's the lone one.
So for those 54 shows, they were on the road for 82 days. When I was getting into Phish, I was reading the Phish Compendium by Dean Budnick. And I was absorbing it like a kid, like a kid learning about his favorite baseball player or something. I was remembering stats and this image that I had of people, I joked about it with you and your daughter, but this image of people traveling with the band or scraping together, quote unquote, a living to get from one place to another. 82 days.
Yeah.
That's, I'm not very good at math, but that's like 25% of the year.
Yeah, it's a long time. And think about those traveling. They did, I'm reading the stats right, 30 states. That's a lot of moving around.
That's nuts. I skipped over that stat when I was looking it over because it didn't catch my eye right away, but 30 states, that's 3/5 of the union. Yeah. and out of those 30 states, 48 cities. Incredible. It's not always the case nowadays, but most of the time, I think it's fair to say that it's one state at a time. The only exceptions I could think of might be Texas, California, New York, where they'll play SPAC and then maybe Long Island or New York City or, San Francisco and then Los Angeles. But for the most part, you just referenced the show last summer as Arkansas. You didn't say the name of the city.
For the way they tour now, that was the closest show that I got that year. And that was still 500 miles away. So they just tour a little bit different now, and now the Alabama 3-night stand surprised me. Things were definitely different in 95. They were hustling hard.
Yeah, they were building that infrastructure so that they wouldn't have to do it again.
Right.
And looking more at some of the stats, this one blew my mind. So out of 54 shows, the total number of songs played, 1,116.
Wow, that's a huge
If you did this whole tour, you saw over 1,000 different songs.
How'd they even do that?
How'd they do that? And 52 of them were one-timers, which I guess
helped, but that's still not catching up too much to the big number.
Yeah. I wonder if that includes the Quadrophenia sets.
You would think so.
I would think so. Yeah. Cause Quadrophenia is a double album. There's a lot going on in there. Yeah. 38 debuts. I'm thinking that if you broke that down into a pie chart, that Quadrophenia would eat up a big chunk of that.
Yeah.
Most played songs. Do you have the stats in front of you or do you want to guess?
I'm about to bring them up.
Don't do it. Don't do it. did you break it?
No, I won't.
Okay. What would you guess were the most played songs? There's one listed for a cover and one for an original.
Oh, 1995 cover and original.
Fall 95.
Sorry. Fall 95. Possum for the original, maybe.
And what's your guess for the cover?
Oh, gosh, that's a good one.
They played the cover 18 times.
I don't know. You're going to have to tell me on that one. You got me stumped.
All right. The original, they played Free 22 times in 54 shows.
How about that?
Right? And most of the time, it was the same song. It didn't really change that much. That was before Free really developed into like a jam vehicle that it occasionally is now. And the covers, I never would have gotten this if you gave me 1,000 guesses. I'm Blue, I'm Lonesome.
Oh, okay. I think that's played at the show we're going to talk about.
All right. I'll check that. The biggest bust out was Shaggy Dog, which is a lot of fun. I've never seen that live.
No, nor have I.
And the longest song, this did not surprise me in the least, was You Enjoy Myself from Halloween.
Yeah, that's
which is my favorite, You Enjoy Myself. It's everything Phish could do.
Yeah. Just hustling.
And look at this gap. So biggest venue to the smallest venue.
Okay.
The biggest venue was a Shoreline Amphitheater, like 20,000 person capacity. And the smallest venue, 2,539, the Orpheum Theater in Vancouver.
Wow, wouldn't that be fun?
And that was a week apart. Shoreline was September 30th and Vancouver was October 6th.
That's quite the juxtaposition. They were probably saying it could go this, could go one way or the other, boys.
Now, that doesn't mean they sold out Shoreline, but just the idea that they could book it. This last one, this last stat, I think was made for you.
Okay.
14 different guests.
Yeah.
14 different sit-ins.
Just as I would like more of them. I would like to go back to these days. It'd be interesting to see who they would have nowadays. But yeah, they had some good ones.
I know you mentioned Carl Perazzo, but do you have a guest sit-in that if you could snap your fingers, they have to be alive. If you'd snap your fingers and have someone come in, sit in with Fish at your next show in Alabama, who would it be?
Oh, God. You know, I haven't taken the time. I haven't had the opportunity to see Billy Strings, but I would like to see, you know, what would happen between the band and Billy. I think that would be timely, and I think something good could come of it.
He just announced the big fall tour. And speaking of large venues near me, he's playing, I think, the Nassau Coliseum.
Good for him.
So I think the attendance or the capacity there is 12,000.
Wow.
So I think I'm going to check him out. I haven't seen him.
Festivals and things. So he's getting the taste for the big crowds. You know, that's word of mouth. Talent can blow up.
Yeah, that Grammy appearance where they cut to commercial really did a lot for him. But let's take a look at these guests. Stop me at any point if you want to say anything good, bad, or otherwise about any of these or the shows in which they played.
Okay.
So on December 11th, Warren Haynes was there, awesome. Which is fabulous, right? It was, I think, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, maybe Funky Bitch.
Just an amazing musician.
Bela Fleck on November 29th.
I loved Bela Fleck.
Yeah.
May or not have been because of this show, but I've been to a lot of Bela Fleck shows.
I used to see Bela Fleck a lot because it seemed that in the mid 90s, every show I saw, he opened for Dave Matthews' band.
Speaking of Dave Matthews. I've seen that a couple times. Yes.
I remember the first time I saw Future Man. It blew my mind. I didn't know what music, like, I didn't know what was happening on stage.
Just such a,
my ears loved it.
After hearing and seeing Trey, I chased all good string players. So yeah, Bela Fleck is definitely way up there for me.
Yeah, count him in that category. A few days earlier than that, Dr. Jack McConnell. I have a feeling without checking that was in South Carolina. Or one of the Carolinas.
Okay.
You know, that's where he lives, where Paige grew up. Jimmy Buffett and Butch Trucks on November 16th, which I think was in West Palm Beach.
What a party.
Right? Have you ever seen that or heard it? Do you know?
Okay. I will after this, though.
Yeah, there's video of it on YouTube. Also, it's on fish.in, and the video has worse audio quality, but the audio on fish.in is much better, but you can't see it. It's worth looking and listening to both.
I got to check it out.
I believe they played Brown Eyed Girl together. I don't know about Butch Trucks, though.
Okay.
I have to check that one out. Oh, your favorite, the Giant Country Horns for October 31st, obviously, for Halloween.
Amazing moment.
I never heard of this guy. Johnny Bagpipes Johnston on October 20th. Do you know who?
I don't know Bagpipes myself. No.
All right.
Under the radar.
That's my job on the fact check. Medeski Martin and Wood on October 14th and 17th.
Yeah, late 90s belonged to them somewhat too. They were hot.
Yeah, they were playing everywhere. It was very easy to see Medeski Martin and Wood.
Definitely.
And I think that's it, unless I'm missing. No, that's it. So you mentioned earlier that you were a freshman at Arizona State, right?
Yep.
Living on campus. So I think you mentioned also that someone asked you to go to this show. So in the fall of 95 in October, Can you give us a little bit more background and a little bit more about who you were at the time? Like, what music were you listening to?
Sure. 95, I was 20 years old. I had taken the long drive from Houston to Phoenix and became a student at Arizona State, and I lived in a co-ed dorm, met a bunch of new people from all over the place. Very exciting time, and ended up getting to know this girl who came to me one day and said she'd lost something. And so I really wanted to help her because she was really cute. And, you know, so I did my best. I found what she was missing, and they were Fish tickets. I didn't know the band. I knew the band because they were in my rotation, Long Boy. And I'd heard of them, but it wasn't really something I set out to do. But anyhow, she invited me to the show. It was just the two of us. And so we head to the show together, arrive on lot, see just this incredible parking lot scene. I've never seen anything like it before in my life.
What is, sorry to cut you off, but what was the venue like? I've never been. I've been to Arizona.
But well, it doesn't exist anymore, so you can't find it. The Dead had played there at least once before, I think. But it's kind of like a desert. It's just desert out there. Even in 95, Phoenix wasn't all that developed. You say Chandler as the location of the venue. When you look it up now, I thought it was Mesa back then. Things are changing all the time over there. Did you ever go to South Park Meadows in Austin?
No.
Anyway, it's just a stage and just a long lawn. So it's not like an amphitheater or anything. It's just sort of like hard brown grass. in Phoenix at that time, I don't remember the capacity, but it wasn't really sold out by the look of it. But we sought out a place in the back of the, back of the upslope, and so we could still see everything.
But. And what was the lot scene like? You mentioned getting there and just being blown away. What do you remember from it?
Well, I didn't even hear much about like the Grateful Dead scene or what a shakedown was or anything like that. So normally in the 90s, go to a concert, you pull up to like the basketball stadium and just walk in, see the show, and walk out. And this was something completely different. I mean, it's the lot we know today, but just incredible as a 20-year-old seeing people, you know, selling almost everything and anything.
Did you buy anything?
I didn't. Here's part of the story. Okay. The girl that took me, her ex-boyfriend was someone that was following the band in 1995, and we wanted to avoid any sort of eye contact at all costs, so she rushed me through the lot into the venue.
Fair enough. I think we've all been in that position.
Yeah. Well, it ended up good. This story gets better and better, I think.
If I could, the song that you chose for today's episode was played right in the middle of the first set. So it was after a really great Divided Sky and before what was then called The Fog That Surrounds.
They opened the show with Stash, and it was a great, you know, upon listening again, a great version. I liked kind of the mind bendingness that Trey took occasionally in 1995, just sort of sticking to a note or a couple of notes and just sort of freaking you out. That was like, I was into it. I liked it a lot. And I like funny people too. And after Stash, he said this, that was live in concert. So I was like, oh, like it's on the poster. You know, you see the poster around town, Fish live in concert. So he was sort of joking about how stupid that sounds. And I said, this is a guy I could enjoy. But yeah, Divided Sky was great. A really nice, standard version of 95, but really powerful at the time. Having not heard it before, I was like, okay, this guy also has chops, funny and interesting, but he can really, really play. Yeah, and when Divided Sky ended and If I Could began, the girl and I had been talking for a while. Sorry, everyone in the crowd. Chomped our way through this story, actually. But by the time If I Could started, we were feeling really good about each other. And when Paige sits down at the grand piano and starts playing that, I'm just melting. So we're having a great conversation, and I could feel myself, even at 20, I know what falling in love feels like. So, just looking at her during that song, it was an amazing moment.
Let's talk about If I Could, what it means as a song or what it might mean to you personally. I think that this is one of my favorite Phish ballads. The version on Hoist absolutely slays me, whether it's the first time I heard it or if I just listened to it before I hit record on this conversation. Alison Krauss, talk about guests, maybe the best vocal performances on any Phish album ever in like six words.
I'm so glad she's on that album.
It's beautiful. My brother owned Hoist before I stole it, I guess is the way it is, the way to put it, the way I would say it if I was talking to a lawyer. I got it when I was first getting into Phish. My brother had a copy of Hoist, I'm guessing from Columbia Records, you know, the 8 CDs for a penny or whatever they had. And we were 3 years apart. So when he was a high school senior, I was a freshman. My first year in high school was his last year. And so when he was a senior, he had his license. He was driving everywhere. He didn't have to, you know, he wasn't home as much as he once was. So I started scanning his album collection, and I had gotten into Phish about a year prior. So when I saw that he had a Phish album, it blew me away. He's not into Phish, wasn't, still isn't, probably won't be. So we didn't have any similar tastes in music. So he probably didn't even realize that his copy of Hoist was missing at all, you know. So the opening of that album is flawless, and when Down With Disease melts into If I Could, it's magic. I think it's one of Phish's best studio tracks and transitions, and I've tried years and years and years of making romantic sense of If I Could, but the lyrics don't let me. It sounds more like a almost like you're helpless in a way. What does this song mean to you on a personal level?
It's lyrically perfectly fitting this situation. That moment for me also, some of the lyrics, I was in a long distance relationship at the time, staring at a woman that I'm literally falling in love with right now. If I could, I would, but and I'm 20 years old. I don't know how, you know, this is an emotional level that I'm not ready. These are decisions. These are adult decisions. These are moments that I don't know if I didn't know how. So those lyrics really tell that story for me every single time. And with Alison Krauss on that album, it kills me every time. Beautiful. Yeah. Absolutely beautiful. You don't hear a lot of people talking about If I Could, but they do when you bring up best album tracks. I think a lot of people agree with you that it is one of the great achievements in their studio album career.
But going back to your story and the vibe you were talking about, more of the lyrics started coming through my head as you were speaking, because I put myself in your shoes. God knows I fall in love 1,000 times when I was 20 years old, you know, and just that idea of stay with me till time turns over. I want to feel my feet leave the ground. Like what could better capture that feeling?
I'm melting into nothing. Yeah. It was a completely different planet for me during that song. This song is definitely meaningful. I hope it is to other people too.
And the track that you picked, so from October 11th, 1995 at the Compton Terrace Amphitheater in, I guess, Phoenix. Should I just say Phoenix? No more Chandler.
Greater Phoenix, whatever.
All right. In the Greater Phoenix metropolitan area. When it starts, you can hear Trey count it off, which I thought was very endearing.
Yeah.
And it's a little unsteady to start. And you and I heard two different things because this is an audience recording. Yeah. I heard some guy down front say, "Oh no."
I heard it too.
Oh, you did.
I did. I heard it too. But I think that's maybe If I Could is that guy's piss break song.
You know, maybe it is.
Have to be or something. I don't know.
It is right the middle of the first set.
Hey, you some know? People are prepared, some others are not.
Take me to another place, she said. Take me to another time. Run with me across the oceans. Float me out of silver.
I will say, though, back to our effusive love of If I Could, there were people at the time who did not like it because they just had some visceral reaction to a female voice on a Phish album. It was very odd for a lot of fans at the time who, I guess, really got on board maybe during Rift or during A Picture of Nectar and were used to kind of, you mentioned, like the goofiness and the sense of humor and the zany Zappa sort of prog rock and guitar electrics, that it was weird to have like a very earnest, serious ballad insert itself into the Phish rotation.
Well, I think it was probably a calculated move on the part of the band. Like, your brother, who doesn't like stuff like that, owned Hoist. My wife, who hates Phish, had Hoist. You know, that album, I guess, made it into more hands, and that might have been a reason for it. And if people took that the wrong way, that's too bad, because
it's their problem.
Yeah.
About a minute and a half in, by the second verse, the harmonies have evened out, at least for Trey and Paige, because they're singing the lead for this one. And at this part, I thought the recording, or at least the performance of this track, kind of hit a turning point, because the chorus sounds beautiful. This is where I could picture Paige as a professional, where she has one hand on one keyboard and the other hand on the other, because you could hear the organ, but also his beautiful piano riff at the same time.
I wanna feel my feet leave the ground. Take me where the whispering breezes can lift me up and spin me around.
I think it's a great version. It did, you know, straighten out from what you heard in the beginning. And I think it became, a good one. I mean, it's a standard song, but this one did sound nice. They were in nice tune, I think.
And about halfway through the track is when the band drops out and Paige is left to play the string part from the album on his piano. Is this where your whole world fell apart and you kind of maybe really melted into nothing?
I certainly did. That was the moment. Piano, I love guitarists and everything, but piano, I'm a real sucker for piano tracks, and Paige on anything is good for me. In the previous summer to the show, A Live One, that was the summer of A Live One, and listening to Squirming Coil, and I still do to this day, it almost brings me to tears. I love piano so much. And I didn't know that a piano could do that for a band like this, but it has made it special. And that moment was really, really, something. I was looking at her, and then there's a piano. The convergence of all the things that I love was pop. You know, I just felt it.
could definitely see how this part of the song can change the complete mood of a show from Divided Sky, you know, to a fan who's there with a crush. I could see how this can completely change your headspace and your heart space.
Yeah.
And then by the end, there's again more dynamics. The song moves up to a climax. There we are again with the climax, with but Trey's piano and guitar, Trey's guitar and Paige's piano are kind of like weaving in and out. They're really joining together to create this effusive feeling. This is all emotion.
Yeah. It's a beautiful song. Yeah. It wasn't yet dark, I don't think. A lot of people, you could see a lot of people, and you could, it's a beautiful song. People dancing to If I Could is nice too. No one's moving very fast. It's all a beautiful ocean.
I was really glad that by the end, the band really came together. There were the whole band was doing their vocal harmonies. Trey is joining in with his melodies and Paige has his piano going. And by the end, the crowd has come around. It's a happy ending.
Yes.
That guy who said, oh, no, I hope that he's back from wherever he went.
I hope he enjoyed that song more than he thought he would.
So dare I ask, does your story have a happy ending?
It does. That was kind of like our first date. Our relationship did come to fruition. We were together pretty much the whole of college, friends to this day. And yeah, I mean, she changed my life. Two loves, her and Fish, and I've been with Fish ever since. The ending was very happy. And I have one more anecdote about If I Could and happiness. I took my daughter to her first show. I think I mentioned that earlier in Rogers. And they played If I Could that night. So my first show, If I Could, her first show, If I Could. And it was beautiful.
So Robert Miller, thank you so much for coming on to Attendance Bias to talk about specifically If I Could from October 11th, 1995 at the Compton Terrace Amphitheater, no longer around, in Phoenix. But we talked about so much more than the song. We talked about Phoenix itself. We talked about college, guest sit-ins, Fall 95. I feel like we got a lot done from one song.
Yeah, it was my absolute pleasure to be here. And going down memory lane this time was a really, really good time. And I want to keep listening and learning and thank you for having me, Brian. I appreciate it.
Attendance Bias Fact Check.
Welcome to this episode's Attendance Bias Fact Check. At the beginning of today's episode, I said that a friend of mine, for his show, picked, quote, the show from Montana a few days before Robert's pick of October 11th, 1995. That friend was Damon Callisto, the founder of the Oceans of Osiris message board. The show he chose to speak about was on October 8th, 1995, at the Adams Fieldhouse in Missoula, Montana. Robert took an educated guess that Hampton Comes Alive has 45 songs on it, and he was right there. The 6-CD set actually has 45 songs. Robert and I talked extensively about the different artists who have sat in with Phish, and he brings up percussionist Carl Perazzo as a favorite guest. Carl Perazzo has sat in with Phish several times, especially in 1992 and 1996. In 1992, it was mostly as a member of Carlos Santana's band, but in 1996, it was typically just him sitting in with the band. In addition to twice being a part of this Santana sit-in, Perazzo joined Phish on stage on October 29th, October 31st, November 2nd, and November 3rd. Just an editorial comment, the show on November 2nd at West Palm Beach is one of the best of that year. The Gainesville show that Robert loves was the next night on November 3rd. The Jambase article that tracks the Fall 95 tour by the numbers is in today's show notes. I guess that 82 days on the road was about 25% of the year. For the record, the 82 days that Phish was on the road during the Fall 95 tour was roughly 22% of the year, so my math still needs a little bit of practice. When discussing the songs most commonly played on the Fall 95 tour, the most commonly played cover was I'm Blue, I'm Lonesome, and Robert says that he thinks the band played it on today's show October 11th, but they didn't. However, they did play the old home plays, so Robert and the rest of the audience got their bluegrass fix that night. I guess that the Fall Tour appearance from Jack McConnell, Page's father, was in South Carolina, and I was right. Dr. McConnell came on stage for the encore of Bill Bailey on November 18, 1995 at the North Charleston Coliseum in Charleston. On November 16th in West Palm Beach, Butch Strux came on stage to play Possum with Phish, and Jimmy Buffett came on for the encore of Van Morrison's Brown Eyed Girl. Johnny Bagpipes Johnston is a combination comedian and bagpipes player who came on stage to play Amazing Grace with Phish. Technically, it was an Amazing Grace jam. That was on October 20th, 1995 at the Five Seasons Arena in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. According to azcentral.com, the capacity of the Compton Terrace Amphitheater was 20,000. And that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank Robert Miller for joining me today, Phish.net for their help with the fact check, and Phish.in for the recording used in today's episode. And thank you for listening, of course. If you enjoy Attendance Bias, please support the show. You could do this by leaving a rating or a review of the show on your favorite podcast app. You could also support the show by following Attendance Bias on social media, mostly Instagram and Twitter. If you reach out and say hello, I'll send you a free sticker. And finally, the best way to support the show is by helping out with the financial cost of producing Attendance Bias. You can do that by visiting www.buymeacoffee.com/attendancebias and donating anything you can. Every penny helps and goes directly toward the upkeep and overhead of operating Attendance Bias. Thank you again for listening, and I'll see you next week on Attendance Bias.